You're listening to the cycling podcast of the 2024 Tour de France with Mitch Docker, Richard Hebram, and Graham Wilgos. Today we're in Pau.
All right, Lionel, we've had about three coffees. We had a chance to simmer down. Mate, nice one. Nice joke. Yeah, well done. Very well played. I don't know how you found that hole, but that's one up to Lionel. Oh, there's one coming back for you, mate. Wait till you see the next dinner bill. Oh, going to be a bit of fun. You bastard.
Well, Mitch, that was your message on behalf of the three of us to Lionel, who booked an absolute horror of a gîte in Argennes for us last night. More on that a little later, because we've made it to Pau not long before Jasper Philipsen crossed the line in a messy old sprint. Attritional before that, attritional for the riders, attritional for the three of us. Not that we're feeling too sorry for ourselves, but Richard, where are we?
Stanislav Bar. I think I'm in the 1970s in this little corner over here with the amount of lacquered wood and cigarette stain that are going on around
us. Lovely, I love this place.
Yeah, it has got a certain character, doesn't it? We're in Pau. The tour is here for the 75th time in its history. We made it eventually after a little diversion on the route today, which we will come on to. The tour just woke up this morning and chose, I don't know what it chose, violence, aggression, kebabs. Madness, kebabs. Just an absolute roller coaster of a stage. When we were driving out of Agen this morning, Mitch, some of your buddies still inside the peloton were saying that it's a hard start. We drove the course. It was a hard start. It was a hard day. It was a long day for us in the car, a quick day for them. They were pretty much up on the fastest schedule, weren't they, the riders? Just, breathless all day. And at the end of it, Philipsen somehow got his second stage win.
Mitch, rolling stage before we get into the tail of the attack. We drove a lot of the course. How did you see it?
I was really happy to drive the first part of the course. It gave me a real idea of what was sort of going to happen out there. It was just very, even at kilometre zero, went straight up, even a 1.5K, I call it a climb. It was a hill, but it was a hard hill, and it just never stopped. And at the top, it was open, crosswind, and so on for the next 30K. It was a really tough start, and I said in the car, this is a perfect launch pad for a big group to go straight off the front, which is what we ended up seeing the whole day, but it never really rode away. There was just a continual battle the whole day, and there were groups going away, and Visma put it in the gutter, and it was just a good old-fashioned slog fest out there.
We knew it was going to be a fast finish, but it was a fast start as well. It was a lightning fast start. I think it was almost 50 k's an hour they went out at.
Yeah, that
break, rolling terrain as well.
Yeah, and it wasn't a tailwind, was it? There was some oomph in that first breakaway to go clear, wasn't there? There were a lot of roulers.
Yeah.
A lot of powerhouses, but also quite a few riders from the GC teams, and then notably Adam Yates was up there in that front group, wasn't he? And that presence of some of those riders dictated the way that it was raced, because the bunch behind wasn't content to let it go. And when we saw them at kilometre 31 or 32 in a little town called Mezan, which we will come on to, if you just dropped me there on the side of the road and I was watching the Tour de France and I had no idea where we were, I would have said it's about 5K to go. It was flat out. Bunch was splitting. There was panic and there was tension and stress in the riders that we saw. As you know, they were trying to close gaps that were opening up, like we were coming into the finale of a fast finish. But that was in the first less than an hour, wasn't it? But it was like that all day.
It's time for the tale of the etap.
So, a second stage win for Jasper Philipsen for Alpecin de Koenig, winning, as we said, a messy sprint. Wout van Aert second, Pascal Ackermann third for Israel Premier Tech. Mitch, just give us a word on Ackermann before we hear from him, because you headed off in the direction of the Israel Premier Tech bus.
Yeah, I went in search of him because, look, I interviewed him the other day, and I feel like he's a guy. I've actually got an eye for him now. He had a lot of confidence in the interview, and he said, I'm getting better. The harder it is, the better it is. And today he featured in the race. He didn't just wait for the sprint. He was in that first move. He was following the moves at the end. Their team, Israel Premier Tech, were riding for him. So I was sort of watching out for him, and I went for him at the finish. and he wasn't happy. He wasn't happy with how it went. He wasn't happy with his own performance. And when rewatching the sprint, I felt like he had more in him.
He wouldn't have been the only one who was unhappy today. A huge, well, not a huge crash, but a really violent crash behind. I hate to use the word violent again, but that's what it was.
Yeah, it was, well, Amaury Capio, the Arkea B&B Hotels rider, was the worst off. He sort of rolled across the line. Mitch, you and I were trying to get a replay of that incident. It looked like Capio swung off and was drifting back from the sprint inside the last kilometre, and he had a little look over his shoulder, saw it was clear, but actually he didn't see a Lotto Destiny rider, who we think is Maxime Van Kiels, was coming up fast in that sort of blind spot. Van Kiels ended up having the door shut on him, was going for a gap that was there and then suddenly wasn't there. Van Kiels made contact with Capio, which brought him down. Case Bol went down. Arnaud Delis was caught up, although I don't think he actually hit the deck. A few other riders. And it was one of those, like, oh, kind of sickening, heavy, high-speed crashes. We'll have to see. It's too early for us to say what the impact of that is. All the riders made it across the line. But the result was that it was a small bunch, wasn't it? A small group that were contesting that sprint finish. Yellow jersey of Tadej Pogacar was ninth, and he was sprinting as if, actually, maybe the GC riders that were caught behind that crash wouldn't be awarded the same time, that actually the time gap was something that he needed to maintain and fight for.
But it was either that, or it was like he was just on instinct and sprinting to get out of the way on what on earth was happening behind him.
Yeah,
or he was just doing a Pogacar and engaging race mode when he feels like it.
Oh, I feel like he's doing Pogacar. Sorry to interrupt here, but he was sort of floating around the front well after the, I think it was 5K to go today, they extended it. Yeah. He's just floating up there on his own. He had Niels Politz in front of him. And I'm like, why is he still riding like third, fourth position? Is he going to go for it? And I was like, for no rhyme or reason, he probably is.
Nobody really had lead out men, did they?
Intermarché sort of put themselves on the front in order to position Gamay leading into the sort of last 9 kilometres. Gamay, by the way, finished fourth today. Nicholas Arndt for Bahrain Victorious finished fifth. It was kind of every man for himself in there at the end.
I think you can't underestimate what Laporte did. Christophe Laporte did an amazing job today. He brought, you know, he brought Van Aert to the front. He got him as far as he could through the last corner, then re-accelerated to the last corner, took him through that corner, then re-accelerated, got him as far as he could. Ultimately, it was too early, and then Van Aert actually did an awesome sprint for second, you could say, because I think if he'd hit out when he did, when he got left on the front, he might have been scrambling to try and even get a podium, but he held his sprint back. He waited for Philipsen to go past, get his wheel, and try and come back around again. So I had a keen eye on Van Aert today because I did tip him from the start of today.
Well played, Mitch. We began the day as well, worth mentioning, with only three of the Fab Four and no Primoz Roglic.
Crashed yesterday in a crash caused by a little bit of unmarked traffic furniture, wasn't it? A concrete border running down the middle of the road, which wasn't marked sufficiently for the riders to avoid it. And actually, it's often, I'm saying, the way that this sometimes happens is that when you have so many marshals and signs and whatnot placed on a lot of the road furniture, it's the places where you don't have it that actually become worse because the riders expect it. I don't know whether that was specifically the case here, but anyway, Roglic was banged up enough for him to not start, which we got wind of a few hours before the race rolled out. Off to the Vuelta again for Primoz Roglic, isn't it? And that sort of star-crossed relationship that he has with the Tour de France continues. He just can't get a break, can he?
The parts that we saw, because we were so patchy with signal coming from the race start to Po, it just seemed like another really compelling day's viewing from start to finish, or another stage where you didn't necessarily think that would be the case.
It's like you've got a kind of a really lively wild animal on a chain, on a thin chain.
Mitch.
Mitch. With just a Tour de France press lanyard to keep him in, you know, and you're like, oh Jesus, and you're trying to get a handle on it and try and keep control, but it's just running off in directions all over the place, and you try and grab it and it slips out of your fingers again. Just when you think you've got a grasp of what is going on, it's just darting off in some direction again. Like Jasper Stuyven was up there in the top 10 at the end, wasn't he? But he was trying to break away inside the final 10K
a couple of times,
and you had Jonas Abrahamsson just more power than he knows what to do with in this year's tour. He was out in the break, the main move, all day, pretty much, and so that got caught with, what, about an hour to go. He was trying to jump off with 3K to go and go on a long one on his own. Even if we had sat down and watched the whole stage in a dark, quiet room, which was kind of the opposite of what we did today.
And it was what we would have needed today, by
exactly.
the way.
Yeah, pretty much. I still think we'd be kind of left scratching our heads trying to piece together and make sense of it all. It does, and almost that defeats the point. It was nonsensical and unpredictable, and that really was what made it it made it so exciting.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Black Friday, wow, shop, Wayfair now, month-long big deals, yeah, these are steals.
70% less money spent.
You can't go wrong, check out this song. Best gift and core, Black Friday scores.
Garlands and trees,
saving with ease.
Lights for your house, lamps for your spouse.
Save at Wayfair.
On dining chairs, mattresses, two sheets that are you. Everything home, these things in chrome. Here's a quick plug, area rugs. Fast shipping, wow, Wayfair is how.
Win the season, win the season.
So, boys, today's winner, Jasper Philipsen, said the race was full gas from the start. The bunch never slowed down. There were crosswinds and a big group ahead. Richard, as you've just alluded to, it was like one group. They would come together, a group having been off the front, and then another group would go off the front. Mitch, back to the sprint and your man, because you've spoken to him on a couple of occasions now, so you maybe got a good measure of how he's feeling about this, how he's really feeling about the stage and the sprint. Pascal Ackermann.
When Tade and all the GC riders went on this first climb, and I was still in, so yeah, I'm really happy about my shape, and I'm a bit sad I couldn't get better than third because I was already two times third, but I'm really, really happy about my shape here. Or maybe I should start a bit more early because in the end everybody was same fast, but yeah, Philipsen took my front wheel when he was passing me, he turned to the right and I nearly crashed, so there was nothing to do better today.
Did you get a sense of the crash that happened right around you with the lead?
I think it was next to me on the left side, but I had no time to watch who it is or what happened. I was just focusing to stay on the road.
Going forward, are you feeling good about your chances to maybe wind up in front?
Yeah, there is still a chance on Monday, and then afterwards we have to see how much is left in the legs and what we can do afterwards.
You didn't look too happy there, Jasper.
He was passing me and took again a turn to the right and my front wheel, and he had so many times now the same and he's still doing it, so I hope they take him back today because that's too much.
Yeah, to give a bit of context back on that, because, you know, watching the sprint in live, I didn't see what he was talking about, and it took me a couple of times to really understand what he was talking about. And when you watch it again, you see Jasper Philipsen makes a big move to the left, and when he comes back into the slipstream, he really jags back again left to get back into Wout van Aert's slipstream, which ultimately cuts off Pascal Ackermann. And to the naked eye, you don't really see it. There's a big move to the left. And once again, like Ackermann said, he goes, look, this is Philipsen. Once again, he's making these crazy moves. We've heard this from Van Aert saying that, you know, Jasper Philipsen is a bit unpredictable in the way that he's sprinting. And for me, there was just no need for what he did today. There was a reduced sprint. There wasn't a fight for positions. He was sitting comfortably on Ackermann's wheel. And he could have launched his sprint from there. Actually, he could have waited for Ackermann to go even longer or whatever. But I don't know why he did this such drastic move to the left to come back on the right again. I tend to agree with Pascal Ackermann there. His sprint was somewhat impeded by, you know, Jasper Philipsen's mood, let alone the FDJ rider.
Clément Russo.
Yeah, Clément Russo, who also got sort of a bit sliced up in that as well.
Are we back to Jasper the disaster?
If I go that far, but I just feel like a bit erratic again, unnecessarily.
Maybe more Jasper disaster in the sense of it does seem to have, perhaps not a reputation, that's putting it too strongly, but riders know what he's about and they know how he sprints. Ackermann being one of them today, obviously felt that had got in the way of him getting a better result.
Should we have a look at the points competition? Because Philipsen has closed the gap on Biniam Girmay, who leads on 346 points now. Philipsen behind on 271. Anthony Turgis for Total Energy on 141. And then Jonas Abrahamsson on 133. Brian Cockard behind for Cofidis on 127. Abrahamsson, of course, Uno X Mobility. Worth revisiting Abrahamsson's, your Norwegian cousin Richard, worth revisiting his animating the day again. Just can't help himself.
He just can't help himself, can he? And the talk in the last week or so has been, well, how long can this guy hold on to the polka dot jersey? But it was really understood that he would lose it in the Pyrenees. I wonder, what's this guy going to do next?
He was part of the day's big break. And should we name a few
yeah,
riders
who
in
was
there?
In there off the top of my head? Mikhail Kwiatkowski was up there, wasn't he?
Jan Tratnik, Adam Yates, which is Yates. Why we saw Ineos and Sudal Quickstep working so hard behind in order to bring it back, because they wanted to protect their position on GC. Magnus Cort, Rui Costa up there, Arne de Lee, Brent Van Moer, Jakob Fuglsang and Hugo Hull for Israel Premier Tech. I mean, it was absolutely packed with power, Mitch.
Force to be reckoned with up there. The thing with Abrahamsson, I'm wondering now, tomorrow could be a break. I'm not saying for the win, but at least over that first pass and maybe the second, he could pick up a lot of points. He'd probably still get in the break anyway, but I'm thinking, was it worth it today?
He doesn't know what else to do, does he?
Yeah.
He thinks that's just how you ride the Tour de France, is you just ride hard from the gun. And
yeah, I would love to see his CTL.
What are you training around for? What are you doing back there? Just come on, let's go.
He's insane. And look, he got involved again at the end. I couldn't believe it. He's just like launching off the front. When they're going 57k an hour, he just launches and holds them at like 20 metres. I'm like, how strong is this guy?
With 150 kilometres to go, we saw Jaco Alula on the front of the bunch trying to close the gap to that big break. Mitch, they're your old mates, but when you are in that position and you know there is such a strong group ahead of you, is there even any time to communicate among each other?
It seemed like they were giving absolutely everything, and Luke Durbridge was up there and they were ripping it on the climb. You could see they were pulling, trying to get it back. Straight over the top goes Visma. And it was like you just done the harness turn in a team's time trial, and then, you know, someone rips straight over the top of you and you get piped from the bunch. And Durbo,
not just someone, I mean, probably the last person you'd want to see ride over the top of you like that. Wout van Aert.
Yeah, and they just went for it in the crosswinds there.
Rich, you mentioned that it was a bit like watching a junior race, in that it was just one group goes, another group catches, then another group goes, another, and it just went round. It seemed to go round and round like that. So with 38 kilometres to go, we saw Richard Carapaz for EF Education Easy Post off the front with Tobias Johansson for Uno X Mobility. So that was their chance, they felt, to launch a breakaway attempt. They got about 30 seconds. And then with 17Ks to go, it all having come back together, another little break went off the front, and that was, as you mentioned, Jasper Stuyven for Little Trek, Brent Van Moer and Fabien Grelier. And they got a small gap of about 10 seconds. But it just went like that all day and in the crosswinds.
To contrast that, when we were driving the course, so we hopped out, saw the race come past, jumped back in the car and rolled along just behind the end of the convoy. And, well, what did we see? We saw Juan Ayuso get
climbing
transferred.
Off.
Well, we didn't see him climb off, did we? We saw him get transferred from the second DS car into the van, and then we kind of followed that van in a slightly stalkerish way down the whole way down the motorway.
We weren't chasing the story.
We were not chasing an exclusive one for Juan Ayuso. That, well, we didn't see that great a ride from Ayuso the other day in the Massif Central on the GC day. He wasn't as present as I think they would have liked him to be. And do we know he's definitely tested positive for COVID? Yes, we do. Spanish climber Juan Ayuso has abandoned the Tour de France after testing positive for COVID, says cyclingweekly.com. I wonder to what extent there's a sort of racing as if this day might be your last on this tour. Not.
Where did you get that from?
What do you mean?
But didn't I say that earlier?
Did you say that earlier?
Yes. We were sat having a coffee.
Credit Graham Wilgos then, sorry.
I said it to Graham this morning.
And I said
Rich
it to you.
Rich said it to you first thing this morning.
And
three men who have had no sleep.
Juan Ayuso said it to me, I think, in a dream. There is that, like, the element of unpredictability to it. I don't know whether COVID is playing on the minds of people or not. It's pure kind of speculation, really. But I think there is a sense of, like, complete unpredictability and the fact that you can't bank on the top rider being there. You know, in no circumstances should Ayuso be dropped today.
I hate that it's not going to be like a full shootout now. It still will be, but I mean, like, I hope it doesn't keep deteriorating like this, because I want to see both teams at full strength, everything they're prepared for, no, you know, gravel stage crashes, all that sort of stuff. Primoz was really annoying, but that was part of racing. But now it's COVID stuff that sort of really, as everyone, I'm sure, disappoints you, because you wanted to see this full shootout and go the best come with the best team and how they're going to attack it.
Yeah, it's not part of the game, is it? So, chaps, we joined the locals in Mazan today to get a real feel for what it's like when the race passes through your town. And they treated us very well.
They did. We ended up parking up just in front of a Peugeot garage that had started a barbecue. It was a little hangout. There were a lot of people out on the road, weren't there, all that first 30K or so, and beyond. Loads of little gazebos being put up in fields, tractors all lined up for show, for the Tour de France helicopters. It was quite a nice sort of buzzy little atmosphere.
It was like, if you imagined what it would be like to pass through a little town like that, it was exactly what you would sort of hope it would be, or kind of the picture you would paint in your mind of. You've got this little barbecue run by the guys who run the local Peugeot garage. You've got half the town crowded in front of a real kind of old school TV that was almost fatter than it was long. Mitch, you enjoyed yourself, got an early beer, or it felt like a morning beer, but it was actually 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, it did. I know. Well, our idea was to go and see friends of my father-in-law's, Ray and Lynn. Shout out to them if they're listening. In Mazin, they've been out there for a number of years hosting a bed and breakfast out there, and we thought we'd pop in and see them and just sort of soak up that. What does it feel like to have the Tour de France pass through your town? Because, you know, often, well, I've heard this story that towns talk about it for a long time. The tour came here when, you know, in 82, we had the tour pass through our town. So the idea was to go into a town and understand what it means to a town to have the tour pass through. Unfortunately, we missed them on the route, and you can't really go backwards on the route. So they're only a 2K up the road, but we didn't have a whole lot of time. So we ended up just parking up, still in the same town at this. It was a great sort of end up random backup plan at the Peugeot store there. And it was such a cool vibe. I wanted to hang out, you know, I wanted to stay there, and I understood the build up. It's not just that moment that we were there, the build up, the months before, oh, the tour's coming here, or when it gets announced, you know, the 6 months before, and then, you know, the month before, getting the town ready, making it clean, putting up whatever they put, and then the day of, and everyone just taking the whole day off and repairing the barbecue, and then ultimately when the race comes through. And what we don't know is what happens now afterwards.
I say the race passed through. I mean, it zipped through at about 70 kilometres an hour, didn't it? Because it was on a real dip. Here's the story of what it's like when the race comes to town.
Grizzle, we're roadside today. We've just fueled up. It's a cool little atmosphere here, isn't it?
Isn't it, though? And we've just been watching it on the TV, and we were the only ones left just to see. Almost to see how close we could leave it before the peloton actually arrives on the side of the road. And now we are among, what, 100, maybe 150 people on the roadside. It's a small little town. It's very different to the Galibier, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really sort of organic. Everyone just got the Barbie out, they got the TV there, there's everything here. Families, super fans, and the race just comes right by their front door. That's the feeling I get. Oh, wow. They came past, and it was the faces. It did not look great there. The guys were just single file giving everything. Richard, you were right down there on the side of the road.
Flat out. Flat out, wasn't it? Breakaway, gunning it. Visma Lisa bike, gunning it. Their Tiche Benoot on the front, wasn't it? Flat out. And then Ineos, panic. We've missed the move with all the GC favourites. Chase. But, yeah.
The only person I thought, in this split second I saw, that had a somewhat easygoing face on them was Pogacar. Everyone else looked like a grimace, didn't yeah. they?
Who else was Cavendish? Just sitting in the wheels, you know, following, not having to work. But Egan Bernal was second wheel for Ineos. You know, behind, I think Ben Turner was drilling it on the front.
Gee, he looked like he'd put in some big efforts too. He was breathing heavy. They all were. Everyone, right to the back.
Well, the pace that they've just come through. I know that we're on a fair old little descent here, but the pace they've just come through was, I mean, it was whiz-bang and they were gone.
And just like that, after all the months of build-up, the weeks of build-up, the day of, everyone getting ready for it, the moment before, it's come and it's gone. The race moves on, but I guess, you know, everyone just, as we just saw on our little corner there, they go back into the little, you know, underneath the Peugeot awning there, and they sit back and watch the TV, and they then just enjoy the rest of the day, don't they?
A few more snags on the Barbie, don't they?
So, Rich, there's a man in the Village de Part every morning called Jerry.
This sounds like the opening to a song.
A Billy Joel song, maybe.
Because Jerry, he's just known as Jerry. Everybody says, "Bonjour, Jerry. Salut, Jerry." And Jerry's there in his little stand, and nobody says his surname. And I completely forgot to record his surname, so I'm sorry, Jerry. We'll correct this tomorrow. Jerry's there working for LCL, the bank that sponsors the yellow jersey, and he hands out copies of L'Equipe and other newspapers. And, well, it's kind of a bit of a routine for me to pick up a copy of L'Equipe and say hi to Jerry. He checks my sticker that he's put on my press accreditation to say that I'm, you know, he's got his list, like Father Christmas. Mitch has got a sticker
as
well.
I've got one.
Yeah.
Oh!
Graham Wilgo
Rizzle.
Got one as well.
I like it.
Yeah, I've been to see Jerry. you're not on the tour until you've been to see Jerry, are
quite,
you?
Quite. And, it just one of those little traditions. And so I kind of wanted to capture a little bit of that routine by just recording what it's like to go and say hi to Jerry. And with a little bit more of what he has been up to in his years on the Tour de France.
Bonjour, Jerry. Comment ça va?
Bonjour, ça va et toi?
Oui, pas mal. Une copie de l'équipe, s'il vous plaît.
Ah, volontiers, comme tous les jours.
C'est ça.
Donc, tous les jours, on en donne 250, dont tous les gens qui sont accrédités, comme toi, pour la presse.
250 copies of l'équipe. Aujourd'hui, Binyam Girmay.
Ouais, je pense que ça va être le héros de ce Tour de France. Parce qu'il a beaucoup de charisme. Toujours le sourire, il reste longtemps sur le podium, on voit qu'il est heureux, et ça, les gens aiment voir les gens heureux.
Lots of charisma, always looks happy. Yeah, I agree entirely with Binyam Girmay. Jerry, combien de Tours de France vous avez fait?
Pas tant que ça, 10, mais les cinq derniers, j'étais le chauffeur, le pilote de Raymond Poulidor.
So 10 tours, the most recent 5, you were Raymond Poulidor's driver. Wow, nice job. Il était comment, Raymond?
Extrêmement sympathique. En un mot, c'était mon ami. On était amis. Parce que quand tu restes 3 semaines dans la voiture avec une personne, à deux dans la voiture, soit tu es ami, soit tu restes pas 3 semaines. Donc,
He was your friend. Et beaucoup d'histoires, vrai raconteur, non?
Oui, je peux, ouais. Je peux raconter beaucoup d'histoires. Après, les sujets, ça dépend des endroits. La montagne, il avait beaucoup de mémoire. On passait à n'importe quel endroit, il se souvenait. Et une histoire amusante, qui est l'année où Thibaut Pinot, à l'arrivée à Albi, perd 1 minute 40. Il y avait du vent, et il perd 1 minute 40 dans une bordure. La bordure avec les équipes belges qui roulent devant et les Groupama FDJ qui perdent donc du temps. Et le matin, on était dans la voiture et il me dit, tu as vu, il y a du vent. Je dis oui, et il me dit, aujourd'hui, il va y avoir une bordure à cet endroit.
So even at the age of 90, même à l'âge de 90, il connaît bien le cyclisme.
Ouais.
83. Yeah. Vous avez rencontré Mathieu Van der Poel.
Oui, mais son papa est derrière moi.
Ah, yeah. We have Adri just behind us here doing an interview.
Tous les jours, every day, Adri come here because it was a house for Raymond Poulidor and Mathieu and Corinne, and it's a family story.
Jerry, you have an... Oh, it's not. It's an English name, American name, Jerry.
because my mother was English teacher, but my father was a sport teacher, and I chose only sport. I'm sorry for my poor English, but...
You have nothing to apologize for. It's very good. Merci beaucoup, Jerry.
See you tomorrow ouais. For the équipe.
À demain.
L'étape de demain, le dîner d'hier. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's dinner.
Right, boys, we've been building up to this all day. I'm going to call it the Arjan Inquiry. Lionel Burney, you have got a lot to answer for. Mitch, I'm going to hand this over to you because we came in for this episode on your voice note, didn't we? Have you simmered down?
I've simmered, yeah. It's taken a while. I'm pretty red. I feel like I've done a red eye. My eyes are still sore from last night. We already got in super late because it was like, oh, I've organised a git for you.
Two gits in there, weren't there?
Let me set it up. So we rock up. It's a bit of the rough end of town. There's, you know, it's felt a little bit dicey, but, you know, I was only judging a book by its cover. We're like, cool, whatever, that's fine. Let's make sure we take all our gear out of the car. Set that scene. We get there, it's a glass door, like it's an old shop. Like, that's a bit strange.
Let's say kebab house, shall we? It was a derelict kebab house. Oh, shop.
So we go in.
Haunted hovel.
Somehow get in. We get in and we realise it is a kebab house because the old stainless steel, you know, kebab units there and like the, you know, the selling counter's still there. We push through all that and we get past that and we realise, oh, there's actually a bit of accommodation in the back here. We go up this makeshift sort of plywood staircase, get to the top. Lo and behold, we run into two men.
No, one man. One man.
So I walk up and there's a man walking out of the bathroom. And as you can tell, I realise he'd used the facilities. I was like, what the hell? There's someone else here.
I mean, we really weren't expecting this. There was a little hint of it.
It was so hot up there too. I've got to add, it was about 40 degrees up there, well, without exaggerating.
It had been 40 that afternoon, hadn't it? And it cooled down a bit during dinner, but yeah, a lot of the heat of the day was left in there. I'd got an inkling of this because earlier that morning I checked out the accommodation, as I sort of tend to do, just to have an idea of what's coming up. And I saw the listing on booking.com and I was trying to check, oh, like, what are we talking about here? Where is it? Like, how good is it? What facilities have we got? Is this going to be a pain to try and organise, check in, and so on? And then I saw what its rating was on booking.com. It was 2.8. And in reality, that's a generous 2.8, I think. But I thought, oh, I really wish I hadn't looked at that. And then when I was texting the owner, I don't know who it was in the end, actually, someone who was responsible for giving us a code to get into the lockbox to get the key, which she said she wouldn't reveal to us until 5 p.m., which was odd anyway.
And to let the other guys
and
in.
Well, I guess so, yeah. And then she revealed that, oh, there's one room at the end of the corridor upstairs that will be private and you can't go in there because it's already been booked. And I was like, oh, that wasn't on the listing. That is not what we generally try and go for. So, yeah, let's just say Lionel has engaged the propaganda machine of the cycling podcast.
While we were driving. Well. Very sneaky.
He read the situation perfectly, and he's got his message out there in the 1101 Cappuccino, which
by all means, please sign up on the Cycling Podcast Substack.
Just purely to get hear the excuses. Newsletters. Just
the,
do it
the
for this
sorry
one.
Bear list in of mind, excuses in the 1101.
There's like, to my defense here, to my defense there. You know, you understand, I've slept in bad places.
It's fake
to my
news.
Defense. Yeah, it's fake news.
It's the grovelings of a man who I think has been racked by guilt following Mitch's message.
So I slept on top of the bed because I didn't dare get into the sheets.
You were in the damp suite, as I think it was titled,
yes.
Wasn't it?
I forgot about the damp suite.
There was mold falling off the walls.
I wasn't alone. There were about 500 mosquitoes in there.
But then we went up to our room. Yours didn't have any sheet. It was just a bare mattress.
Yeah.
And a pillowcase. Mine had a sheet on it and just like this yellow pillow. And then, not because it was that colour, it was white originally. And then eventually in the night, because I passed out after my dinner and my pint of wine.
And you had to sit in the bath to shower off. Yeah.
The bath
was in like, it was like in a cupboard under the stairs, but there were no stairs. So there was nowhere to hang the shower.
It was a bath. And you had to sit.
Graham's finally, I think the emotion might have overwhelmed him at this point.
When I woke up in the middle of the night, just to I'm like, oh my God, what's going on here? I'm covered in sweat. Like, yeah. I've had a shower. I'm just completely
been eaten alive. Yeah.
I realized why the pillow was yellow, because of mountains of sweat that had gone into it. And I took myself down to your area.
You abandoned me with our two friends.
I slept on this random couch that was in the kebab serving area.
Yeah.
Next to a cot. Okay, it's all a shame.
Meanwhile, you'd left me in the single bed with our two buddies, who I don't think said a word to us. It just disappeared in the morning.
I saw them leave.
With lanyards on of the Tour de
that
France.
That was just like, what is this guy doing
as well
down here, like wet in his underwear on this couch?
Yeah.
And that I woke up and looked up at them, and they looked at me. We caught eye contact, and they walked out.
Just shared an understanding in your final moments together. Was that as bad for you as
and
it
this,
was for
the
me?
Worst, the worst thing was, we're actually at the start town, so we had time. Remember we discussed this? Oh, let's hang out. We've got time in the morning. Let's we just got out of there so early and went to the start at 7:30 this morning.
Oh, dear. And it's such a shame because dinner last night, let's finally get to dinner. I'm not saying it was up there, but it was probably in the top one.
It was like the Taylor Swift of Tour de France dinners. It was right in at number one, wasn't it? We were sat there kind of before the main course came out thinking, how are we ranking our dinners? Which one, you know, oh, I remember that night there, I remember the garage pizza, remember the wine accompaniments in Dijon. And then we were thinking, this is up there. I like the sound of this. And then it was just the most beautiful dinner, wasn't it? We were moved to the terrace, and a cool breeze was wafting over us just as we had our tonka bean creme brulee.
Who was it named after, that place?
Nostradamus.
Yeah.
And Nostradamus apparently spent a lot of time in Agen. And that the restaurant, which was called Le Nostradamus, apparently had been an inn, you know, stopping off food place for 500 years or so. They reckoned it was an inn during Nostradamus's time, and obviously had sort of changed owners and they weren't serving that cuisine back in the 1500s. But yeah, a beautiful spot. And
one of those places that the waiter or the waiters really want to take their time to explain to you what's gone into the food, why it's got that flavour, why the chef has decided to cook it that way.
Yeah.
It's seasonal, it's fresh, it's local.
Absolute best of dining in France. None of the clichés. It was classic fare, wasn't it? You know, what was the three main courses that we could have chosen from was a beefsteak, was duck à l'orange, and a white fish.
Well, I had foie gras to start. A big slab, too. Whew.
And we had, what did we have, Graham? Like a tomato thing with a burrata and focaccia.
Yes.
A bit like the other night. All
and
of it.
And dessert?
And dessert.
Couldn't have been more French.
Crème brûlée. Crème brûlée was,
plus
delightful.
Those little aniseed marshmallows to finish as
well. And an egg. We got a mousse bouche of like an egg that had something done to
it. Sort of aperitivos.
Yeah. It was like a kind of runny egg, but it had been whipped up and made really sweet with cinnamon was in it, and sugar and pepper, and there was another spice that I can't remember. I want to say something like anise, or a kind of, it had that sort of slightly eastern flavour to
licorice,
it.
Licorice-y flavour.
Yeah, almost, star anise or something like that was in there.
It was great. I really liked it. It was, and we sat out on the terrace, we enjoyed a coffee, and we had the creme brulee out there. It was lovely. And then, well, we just heard.
Yes, and then, but as Lionel has been telling us all day, it's all part of the experience.
Don't believe what you read in the news.
Now we've had that experience, we don't wish to repeat it. We should probably talk about where the tour goes tomorrow and where we will follow. Stage 14.
We are in the Pyrenees.
It's gonna get high and wild. Po to Saint-Laurent, Soulang, and the Plat d'Aday to finish. 151.9 kilometers, two hors catégorie climbs, including the Tourmalet. 18.9 kilometers at an average of 7.4%, and that comes after 70 kilometers. Then you've got the Cat to Orquette de Richard d'Ancison.
Hawkett being a local phrase for like coal, and Ancison being one of the little villages down there. Probably the most, well, in the Pyrenees, definitely in the top three. Most beautiful climbs of the Pyrenees. Stunning. Not the hardest climb, only a Cat 2, but absolutely beautiful.
Last 2.8 Ks of that are closer to 7%. So yeah, things it's a narrow, get interesting there.
It's a narrow and technical descent off the Hawkett as well, and then it's a tiny bit of valley road before we go straight into Plat d'Aday. And what's the start of Plat d'Aday? I seem to remember it's like pretty brutal. Yeah, look, here we go. What's that, the first 3k are over 9%,
so 10.6 k's to the top with an average of 8%, but as you say, a brutal old start. Where might we see an attack tomorrow? Where won't we see an attack? I guess
it's one of those Pyrenean stages where, you know, if experience counts for anything, you'd see the brake go in that opening 60 kilometers or so just before the intermediate sprint, and then the GC contenders would start to reel it back in, and then we'd probably be a bit of like, is it going to be the brake that contests it on Plat d'Aday? Probably not. It'd probably be the GC riders that contest it. After this tour so far, I have no idea what's going to happen. It could be anything.
If it's going to be a GC day, are we going to see another finish like we saw a couple of days ago? Is it going to be mano on mano?
It's slightly different because the nature of the climbs is very different than the Massif Central. It's much more kind of regular is the wrong word, but they're longer climbs, the gradients are steadier, and they're less punchy and less instantaneous, you know, one after another, short. But they are not easy climbs. It's the harder side of the Tourmalet, arguably speaking, from the western side, from Luz Saint-Sauveur. And then they drop down through La Mongie, and then, Plat d'Aday. That first bit is right up on the valley side. It's like it's cut into the rock, and you can see it from Saint-Lary-Soulan at the bottom. We actually get to take a cable car to the finish tomorrow, which should be fun, I hope. You're all okay with cable cars?
I'm
great.
Okay.
Great.
Grizzle?
Yeah, looking forward to it. It'd be nice not to have to walk up there. after last night, I'll do anything.
Yeah. The climb is cut into the rock face almost, and it just gets baking hot. So if the sun comes out tomorrow, then it can be a really brutal climb. 50 years since it was first in the Tour when Raymond Poulidor won on there. Well, Van der Poel is not going to be winning tomorrow's stage unless he turns around his form spectacularly. But it'd be a significant day for him after his grandfather won up there 50 years ago.
Have we got any suggestions or favourites? What are you thinking?
Jonas Vingegaard for me. I think it's going to be another day where he shows just how much he is coming into form. Visma Lisa Bike will go into tomorrow with a huge amount of confidence after the Massif Central. Why not? They've got time to make up on the GC. Let's see if Pogacar will show the chinks in his armour again.
What is it, just over a minute that he's down to Pogacar? The whole talk of the tour up until this point has been that Visma Lisa Bike and Jonas Vingegaard have been waiting for the Pyrenees because that's what really suits him. The longer climbs where they can really expose Pogacar over a long day. What we've seen, you know, limiting his losses on Côte de Saint-Luca, doing well in the TT, and then really surprising everybody on stage 11 in the Massif Central. They're kind of ahead of the game almost, but tomorrow they will have been planning for a long time to really take advantage of. So whether it's Vingegaard or Pogacar at the end, I don't know, but I think it will be between those two.
Just briefly before we come to you, Mitch, we've got a quick corrections corner that I was frantically searching for. I'm going to muck this name up as well, but let's give it a go. Wim Kenk. Wim, thank you for writing in. He says the pronunciation police have been on the blower that after Graham for his efforts on Vingegaard, or Vingigo, as Graham prefers, Richard's Vingegaard is much better.
But I like Vingegaard.
Vingegaard. I don't think I said that, but it's you know, I accept I that my pronunciation Vingegaard. Is not spot on of Vingegaard.
Under the guard at the end.
But we will. I will make more of an effort to go nearer to Richard's Vingegaard. Mitch, are you saying that name is tomorrow's winner? Who are you going for?
The guard. I'm going to go Vingegaard tomorrow.
Jonas.
Yeah, Jonas. Jonas Vingegaard. No, I think I agree with you guys. I think you know this is going to suit him a bit more. They've got the confidence. They need to start chipping away. This is it. And I feel like they're ready to play. Let's go for Jonas Vingegaard.
Let's go. And let's go and see just how bad tonight's lodgings are. Or good, for that matter. We live in hope.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.